The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. So we're starting out today with Oprah's Insider. Oprah asks, what are you looking forward to? What is inspiring you this season? What is bringing you joy? What is bringing you a sense of hope or just making you a little bit happier? I want to know, were you one of those kids like me who was always so excited about school starting and a new fall season unfolding? You know, I just love school. It was where I felt seen and valued, and I really love fresh stacks of fresh, crisp notepaper and new pencils. I remember when I got 500 sheets one time. I know it sounds ancient for these times. Reminds me of when one of my godchildren, Will, asked me, were you around for the Dewey Decimal System? Yes, I was, Will, I said. Or it reminds me of the time I was describing to a third grade class growing up with no running water or electricity, and one of the little girls raised her hand afterward and asked, did you know Abraham Lincoln? Well, certainly a world unimagined has occurred since many of you and I was in school. But this feeling of new beginnings with the fall season and having a fresh start before the year ends now feels like a part of our culture. I want to know what you are looking forward to. What is inspiring you this season? What is bringing you joy? What is bringing you a sense of hope or just making you a little bit happier? Let me know in the comments. Go well this week. This next article is in Wellness. How to really, truly be happy alone. Expert advice on building a relationship with yourself. All too often, the idea of being alone has a negative connotation. That's because it's associated with the word lonely. But getting to the point where you enjoy being alone and, dare we say, feel happy alone, is a powerful place to be and one that can be very grounding and rewarding once you're comfortable in it. In order to feel happy alone, you must first build a relationship with yourself. This involves actually getting to know yourself as you would anyone else you wanted to build a relationship with, explains Nancy Collier, psychotherapist and author of The Emotionally Exhausted Woman. Collier adds that while you may think you already know yourself, maybe more than you want to know, most of what you know is probably about who you should be and shouldn't be, as opposed to who you really are. In that sense, getting to know yourself unapologetically is the first step to learning how to love yourself and be happy alone. Here's an expert guide to finding happiness alone. Become your own best friend. First of all, be mindful of self-judgments that might arise when spending time focusing on yourself. And remember that putting yourself first is a healthy move. As women, we're taught to be selfless, to take care of others' needs over our own, and if possible, to have no needs of our own, says Collier. If we put ourselves on the list of people who matter, if we choose to spend time with ourselves, we're often labeled selfish and entitled. Collier says it might be helpful to acknowledge the loss up until this point of not having experienced true love for yourself or even happiness in solitude. You can also do a small ritual like burning a candle or journaling to signify the start of your personal journey to love yourself and appreciate being alone. Journaling can be a wonderful way to discover new things about ourselves and gain deeper insights into who we are, says Kristen Wilson, a counselor and chief experience officer at Newport Healthcare. Writing in a journal can provide an emotional release and offer a place for us to be completely honest and authentic with ourselves, she adds. Strengthen that connection to yourself. Loneliness can be harmful to both our physical and mental health, so it is important to tackle feelings of loneliness as they arise. But ending loneliness doesn't necessarily mean adding more people to your life. When we feel lonely, we immediately set out to expand our circle of people. convinced that more intimacy with others is the answer to our emptiness, says Collier. While this approach can be helpful, the most profound form of loneliness we experience comes from our disconnection with ourselves. To mend that rift, start by getting curious about who you are, what you really feel in certain situations, and what you truthfully want out of life. When you start paying attention to and relating to yourself with curiosity and kindness as a destination and someone worth knowing, a new kind of intimacy forms. An intimacy with yourself, which, in fact, is the most reliable remedy for loneliness, Collier says. Focus on your desires, not your duties. First, examine the amount of time you spend on social media. Then, take a step back so you're not focused on what others are doing or feel that you are missing out on something, says Wilson. Mindless scrolling can often leave us feeling sad and lonely. Once you've unplugged a bit, try unpacking your narrative and core belief about what it means to spend time with yourself, says Collier. Think about what's getting in the way of enjoying that time. Do you think it makes you a bad person to want to be in just your own company? Does time with yourself mean that you cannot spend time with others? That it's either or, says Collier. Enjoying time with yourself requires evolving your idea of yourself from someone whose purpose is to pay attention to and serve others to someone who's deserving of your own attention, for the simple reason that you want and need it. When spending so much time alone, keep the focus on what do I want. Collier says that so much of how we spend our time is based around the question, what should I do? Instead, when you allow yourself to live from want, time with yourself has the possibility of being joyful and genuinely nourishing, she says. Parts of this article were edited due to time. Over in relationships, this article is entitled The Secret to Making Any Conversation More Meaningful. It's listening well, says a woman who has conducted 1,600 podcast interviews. Here's how she does it. There's something about me that makes people tell me things they've never told anyone else. I don't know exactly why, but I have a few guesses, and it has to do with the way I listen. First, when I talk to people, they can tell that I'm deeply interested in learning about them, that I never get tired of hearing someone's story, whether it's the person sitting next to me at a dinner party, the air conditioning repairman whose wife is going through IVF, or an author I'm interviewing on my daily author podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I often end up hugging the person goodbye. I listen well because I care, but it's more than that. When I was a teenager, I was so shy in groups that I literally couldn't talk. I attended one summer program where for 5 weeks I was practically mute. I just sat back and smiled, analyzing conversation patterns, marveling at the ease of everyone else's dialogue, and wondering why it was so hard for me to utter a single word. Several decades and many, many ups and downs later, my shyness is long gone, but my reverence for conversing well with others has persisted. Here are some things I keep in mind when interviewing authors, catching up with friends, or chatting with someone I've just met to ensure a meaningful exchange. And remember, everyone loves being around a good listener because it makes them feel special. In my opinion, they already are. Number one, the power of looking someone in the eye with kindness and interest is profound. Don't let your eyes wander around the room or even glance at the clock, and make sure to apologize if you need to look elsewhere. I'm so sorry, it's the school nurse. Can you hold on just 1 second? It's a rare thing in today's screen-based world to have 30 minutes of direct eye communication. It's surprisingly moving, even life-affirming. Body language works magic too, number two. I lean forward toward the person or the screen and tilt my head because that's how I hear and focus best. I smile slightly as they speak or mirror their emotions, like expressing my own sadness as they talk about grief. I nod. Number three, interpreting ruins everything. Stay silent and just wait. If you want to get the best out of someone else, how can you if you're cutting them off? The best may be yet to come. Number four, if you want others to open up, you have to, too. I regularly confess things from minor anecdotes about running late for school pickup to more substantial shares about my experiences with grief. It makes people feel close to me and me to them. It shouldn't be calculated. Just talk the way you would to a friend. Number 5. Never think about what you want to ask next while someone is speaking. Be in the moment. Number 6. When you listen carefully, you find tiny clues to what really matters to a person. The other day, I interviewed an author who dropped a breadcrumb in a wrote description of her book about how I've had hard times too. Once we've gotten to know each other more, I circled back and said, "You mentioned earlier that, are you okay to discuss it a bit more? This works in everyday conversation too." Number 7. There's almost always a way in. If someone doesn't want to talk about something, try this gentle approach. "I totally understand if you don't want to discuss this, but I just had to ask. I'm really interested." Number 8. That said, some people are closed off and no matter what you do, they won't let you get closer. Just stay on the surface and move on. It probably isn't personal. Number 9. Your style, energy, and voice need to match the other person's. Don't dictate. Adapt. If you're in a great mood with high energy and jump on a Zoom with someone who's quiet and calm, slow it down. Imagine that the person you're talking to is a runner setting the pace and fall in line. Number 10. People relax when they see your genuine interest. That's because most people aren't used to relative strangers caring about them so much. As soon as someone realizes that you're hanging on their every word, their shoulders drop, their tension dissipates, and they start telling you things. Number 11. People get tired of their own spiels. They long for an unexpected conversation. They want a fun time together and true connection. Number 12. The most surprising people get nervous. Friendliness and warmth are the best icebreakers. Number 13. Small talk is unsatisfying for both parties. To skip it, say, "Okay, tell me your whole story. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up? Take me to here and now." Number 14. Give back to the conversation. Don't just receive information. Offer feedback and ideas. Make the conversation a dialogue about the other person. "Oh, you know what you should do?" Or, "Oh my gosh, that reminds me." Or, "Weren't you freaking out?" Number 15. Phrase things as statements and be okay with silence. "It sounds like you had a really rough time. That must have been so hard. You mentioned the loss of your mom. I'm so sorry to hear about that." Then pause, and the other person will jump in and share more. But please receive their gifts of information respectfully and gracefully share a couple of things about your own lived experience. This way you both get a chance to listen with intention. In work and money, 40 things in your parents' house that could be worth so much money today. As we enter a new decade, it might be in our best interest to revisit the past. Why? Well, there are a few things from your childhood worth cashing in on. Though it's always good to organize, declutter, and get rid of stuff you don't need, there's sometimes value in holding on to old items, and Mom and Dad's house is the perfect spot to find treasures. Can't remember the last time you rummaged through your parents' attic? This list will show you exactly what to look for. From first edition novels to Cabbage Patch Kids and signed yearbooks, there are tons of items you grew up with that may sell for a small fortune today. The patchwork quilt that lines the foot of your old bed could be worth thousands. Have a hoarder at home? Their magazine collections might help pay for your next family vacation. And while some things are more predictable, jewelry, vinyl records, and china, others are not. Take rotary phones, for instance, or family board games. You can even sell Crayola crayons for cash. Trust us, you'll never look at the vintage cookie jar the same way again. Here's the first one, typewriters. The older the typewriter, the more valuable it is. If your parents inherited a pre-1940s model and it's still in working condition, it could be worth up to $800 today. Vinyl records. Need an excuse to dust off your family's record collection? If your parents still own any of these valuable vinyls, they could be worth thousands. So, Beanie Babies. Contrary to popular belief, the critters we once knew and loved are not actually worth thousands of dollars today. But if your family kept a first edition Princess Diana bear in pristine condition, she could be worth close to $50 or more. Rotary phones, everyone had these and now they're basically antiques. Some rarer models can be worth hundreds, so you might not want to throw them out after all. Crayola crayons. If your family held on to an antique box of vintage hues, it could be worth up to $500 today. Your mom's wedding dress. Didn't wear mom's wedding dress like she hoped? Don't feel guilty. If it's still hanging in your closet, you can help her sell it for up to $250 or more. Silverware. Remember that silverware your parents only used for special occasions? If it came from your grandparents or great-grandparents, you might be in luck. A full antique set can sell for hundreds today. Jadeite kitchenware, and that's J-A-D-E-I-T-E. If your family inherited the signature 40s kitchenware, certain pieces might be worth reselling. Salt and pepper shakers go for close to $50, while loaf pans are worth almost $150. Fine china. When the dinner party days are over, it's time to sell the china. Bring your parents' collection to an appraiser who specializes in antiques for an expert opinion. Cookie jars. Stick your hand into this. Vintage cookie jars have monetary value. A collector's favorite is the National Pottery Company's Cookies All Over, which can sell for up to $75 per jar. Other rarer jars are worth more than $250. Vintage luggage. Collectors love luggage. If your family owns a mid-century set in good condition, it could be worth hundreds today. First edition books. Did your parents keep copies of your favorite children's books? First edition classics like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the Velveteen Rabbit can sell for anywhere between $100 to more than $1,000. Family board games. The same idea goes for first or collector's edition board games. If you kept a family favorite in mint condition, it could be sold for the same price or more today. The rarest board games are worth thousands. Perfume bottles. Your mom's signature scent isn't worth a fortune, but the glass bottle it came in might be. Yes, perfume bottle collecting is a real thing, and the right sales make hundreds. Vintage advertising signs. If your parents used one of these for basement decor, you might want to put it back on the market. Vintage metal signs from brands like Coca-Cola and John Deere are worth up to $300 today. Small appliances. That old toaster your mom tucked away? Bring it back out. A select few vintage toasters are worth hundreds now. The same goes for mid-century Oyster blenders as well, as they're fully restored. Record player. If you kept an old record player in the family, consider refurbishing it. Most vintage working turntables fall between the $500 to $600 range today, but some can sell for up to $3,500. Retro video games. The hours you spent gaming from the family room couch weren't a waste after all. Collectors will pay thousands for retro video games these days. Original Fiestaware. We all love Fiestaware, but did your family own the real deal? Original Fiestaware from the 30s can be sold for hundreds now, since some of the original colors were discontinued. A full vintage set can go for close to $1,500. Boy Scout memorabilia. If your brother was a Boy Scout, his merit badges could be worth hundreds to collectors. Sewn or used patches are valued a bit less than those in pristine condition. Old cookbooks. Need another reason to love Julia Child? If your parents snagged a copy of her original cookbook published in 1961, it could be worth hundreds this year. Antique tools. Your dad's old woodworking tool might work better than its modern equivalent, which means it's also worth more money if sold today. Certain saws, hand drills, and wrenches are widely sought after by collectors. Vintage lunchboxes. Who knew the metal lunchbox you used in elementary school would become a $100 novelty, especially if you still have the thermos to match. Vintage purses. If your mom's outgrown her vintage Chanel, she might want to put it back on the market. Designer handbag styles often come and go, which means secondhand purses can sell for more than double their original price. Old magazines. Referred to as ephemera by collectors, some limited edition magazines can be sold for hundreds today. Consider important factors like popular culture, historic events, and the issue date before you sell, and when in doubt, ask for an appraisal. Musical instruments. Grow up with a guitar player at home? His or her instrument could be worth a small fortune, especially if it was part of the Fender family. Many 1960s Fender Stratocasters sell for nearly $2,000 or more. Jewelry. When was the last time you went through your mom's jewelry box? From brooches to pendants, bracelets, and earrings, chances are there are a few pretty pieces she still owns and rarely wears, worth thousands. Signed yearbook. If you went to high school with a famous athlete or celebrity and there's a chance they signed your yearbook, dig it out of the closet and talk to an expert. You might be able to sell it for a small fortune. Clocks. If your parents still have that old fancy wall clock, consider taking it down for an appraisal. Antique clocks with trademarks are especially valuable to collectors and often sell within the $1,000 range. Vintage toys. Your favorite old toy may be a plaything of the past, but it could be worth some nice pocket cash today. Some vintage pogo sticks are sold for close to $50, and original Cabbage Patch dolls are worth hundreds. Patchwork quilts. Does one of these cozy beauties still line the foot of your old bed? If so, might be time to fold it up for sale. The most rare and sought-after patchwork quilts are worth thousands today. Old Tupperware. Any chance your mom kept her first set of Tupperware? If so, she could sell it for close to $200 today. Check the kitchen cupboards for vintage Pyrex, too. Some pieces are reportedly worth thousands. Porcelain dolls. Doll collecting is a serious market. If the gals in your family kept a certain vintage or antique doll in pristine condition, she could be worth anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 or more. Vintage eyeglasses. Keep an eye out for old eyeglasses lying around in nightstand drawers. Some name brand pairs more than 25 years old could be worth nearly $1,000 today. VHS tapes. Streaming services are great and all, but are we the only ones who miss those warm and fuzzy VHS tapes? Apparently not. Some collectors will still buy them for hundreds of dollars. Chest of drawers. Whether it was used for clothes, toys, or as a decorative armoire, an old chest of drawers can hold some serious value, especially if it was passed down from another family member. In fact, some antique pieces sell for thousands today. Rocking chair. If the rocking chair that sat in your baby room came from a previous generation, it could be worth hundreds to a collector. Windsor rockers are among the most popular models. Sewing machine. Here's to hoping your mom held on to her old Singer. Some vintage sewing machines can be sold for more than $1,000 today. Christmas ornaments. We know you just put the Christmas ornaments away, but here's your reason to take them back out. Some antique ornaments and hand-blown glass pieces are worth hundreds, if not thousands, to collectors. Artwork. You don't have to be a descendant of Picasso to reap the benefits of fine artistry. If your family has an old antique painting sitting in the attic, bring it to an appraiser. You could have an unknown masterpiece in your hands. Parts of this article were edited due to time. In the travel section, we have 11 of the best places for a solo travel vacation. Who says you have to wait for friends or family to plan an epic adventure? More women are traveling solo than ever. In fact, a survey by OnePoll and TravelX found that nearly 1 in 4 travelers prefers traveling alone, and most of them are financially secure women over the age of 30. But with a wide world out there and airline tickets just a click away, it can be overwhelming for women to decide on the best solo travel vacations that are safe and won't break the bank. When I finally came out of a post-breakup stupor a few years ago and decided I was ready to travel alone for the first time, I looked to the recommendation of another woman, Elizabeth Gilbert. It sounds cliche, but for years her memoir, Eat, Pray, Love, served as a life raft for me whenever I was feeling down. I've read it so many times my copy is tattered, coffee-stained, and dog-eared. And yes, I've also rewatched the movie starring Julia Roberts more times than I can count. So when I was choosing the best solo travel destination for me, there was something comforting about knowing another single woman had walked this path before me. It was also a handy excuse to give to my parents, who were concerned I would end up getting kidnapped. So I booked a flight to Rome, Italy. The Eat in Gilbert's story. It was an uncharacteristic move. Typically, any trip I'd been on required weeks of juggling schedules with friends or family and endless group chats about who was going when and where. But making plans of my own was liberating, and it was the first glimpse at the type of freedom I would experience during my 5 days of exploring Rome and Florence alone, with my map in one hand, gelato in the other. The trip changed my life, and most importantly, taught me that even when I'm feeling lost, quite literally, as I often found myself in the maze of Italian streets, I can count on myself. That map is now framed in my apartment. But because one can only reread Eat, Pray, Love so many times, I wanted to turn to a few other real women and travel experts for their recommendations on the best solo travel vacations, the places they believe all women should experience on their own at least once in their lifetime. Read on, be safe, but most importantly, bon voyage. Onika Raymond is an Emmy Award-winning journalist, travel expert, and host for Travel Channel and NBC. She literally makes a living traveling. I know, dream job, right? When deciding where you may want to travel on your own, she suggests asking yourself the following questions. Are there lots of things to do, see, and experience? Is the destination relatively safe? And are there various opportunities to meet other locals or tourists? Having the option to connect with others can curb potential feelings of loneliness, she says. Here are her favorites. Hong Kong. In this region of China, there are so many things to do and see. It's also very easy to navigate, given that the city, a former British colony, is bilingual. It's also very cheap and extremely safe and a great place to meet people. Fun fact, I met my now husband while I was living on my own in Hong Kong. Cape Town, South Africa. This is a well-established tourist destination which makes finding your way around and picking which sites to see super easy. Arranging tours and transportation is a breeze. Plus, the weather is amazing. If you go, don't miss the opportunity to hike the top of Table Mountain. Costa Rica. This is beautiful country that's all about pura vida. It's also a country that, over the years, has become built on tourism, which means the locals are both friendly and totally used to you. Plus, they accept American dollars, and it's easy to rent a car and take yourself on long, glorious road trips. Paris, France. I know this one is expected, but there's a reason everyone loves the City of Light. You can never get bored in Paris, and the fact that it's so frequented by tourists makes it the perfect kind of place to head on your own. In fact, you'll likely meet other solo travelers. But either way, there's no reason you can't enjoy the city's romance all by yourself. Kimberly Wilson is the founder of upcoming women of color healthcare platform, HUED, H-U-E-D. She is an entrepreneur and an avid traveler who has been to 45 countries in her lifetime, many of them all on her own. She recommends Charleston, South Carolina. If you're a solo traveler interested in history, food, and culture, Charleston is a must. It's a vibrant, friendly, and safe southern city. And the best part? The flights from most cities are often less than $200 round trip. So for me, it's great for a quick getaway on my own that won't break my budget. Bali, Indonesia. This island has beautiful, beautiful beaches, plus spiritual temples, luxurious massages, and inexpensive food and accommodations. I mean, what more can a girl ask for? That might explain why a lot of solo female travelers, including Elizabeth Gilbert in Eat, Pray, Love, come here. Rome, Italy. Like Ariana mentioned, Rome will definitely check the box for the eat of any Eat, Pray, Love solo journey. But from delicious food to fashion and historic monuments, you'll be enthralled by all that this city has to offer. And if you're a single solo woman, you might even experience your own fair share of Italian romance. Jakiya Brown gave up her high-paying corporate job to indulge in her wanderlust and travel the world on her own. Now that she's been on the road for more than 2 years, she has plenty of experience navigating new places as a solo traveler. A few destinations she vouches for. Dakar, Senegal. Senegal has been named one of the top places to visit by Lonely Planet, National Geographic, and the New York Times. I think that's because there is something for everyone here, whether you're 22 or 75 years old. If you're looking for culture, beach, music, or local cuisine, you can find it on any corner. And once you learn a few phrases in Wolof, the local language, and French, you'll easily be able to communicate with locals. Dakar specifically has an abundance of hospitality, and the art scene makes for one unforgettable solo travel experience. Lisbon, Portugal. From cozy traditional restaurants to wine, welcoming locals, and coastal views, Portugal is easily a top place to travel solo. Getting around is convenient on your own. There are plenty of options, including car rentals, trains, Uber, and apps like Blabla Car, BLABLA. You can also visit castles, enjoy stunning sunsets, and see different landscapes, all in a span of only a few days without breaking the bank. Jerusalem, Israel. The Holy City is an easy one-hour ride from Tel Aviv. It's also walkable and offers plenty of tours where you can meet other international solo travelers. Tulum, Mexico. This seaside town is accessible by bike or foot, and it's an oasis with adventure, historical ruins, and breathtaking white sand beaches. Solo travelers can skip the commercialism of Cancun and enjoy a more upscale yet peaceful experience in the jungle. And if that's not enough to sell you, there's no shortage of tacos and margaritas. Over in Culture and News, Cher says she'll still be keeping her hair long at 80, and this is her reason why. The 77-year-old shared her thoughts on aging. You won't be seeing Cher with a blue rinse or a pixie cut anytime soon, just in case you were wondering. The icon turned 77 in May, but edging toward being an octogenarian in 3 years isn't factoring into her style and beauty choices, she revealed on Good Morning Britain this week. While she may have sent the world reeling with a brief stint as a platinum blonde back in March, her black hair is here to stay. When asked about her age and what keeps her feeling young, those iconic long tresses were one of the first things that came up. My friend Paulette and I were talking about when we were going to have to cut our hair and stop wearing jeans because it seemed like in those days that's what women did, and it hasn't hit yet, she said. I just can't believe I will be 80 at some point, sooner than I wish, and I will still be wearing my jeans, and I will still be wearing long hair, and I will still be doing the same stuff I've always done. When asked about not following the trend for going gray, Cher instead spoke about the pretty amazing genes in her family and about how she suspects her outlook on life to be a factor, telling the hosts, I don't know if not feeling old makes you younger. I'm not trying to be young. I am who I am, she said. I'm just getting along. Still in Culture and News, Kourtney Kardashian reveals she had urgent fetal surgery, but that she and her baby are okay. I will be forever grateful to my incredible doctors for saving our baby's life, she said in a statement. Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker's unborn baby is doing okay after a health scare that left the pregnant Push founder temporarily hospitalized. Kardashian opened up about the incident today on Instagram. I will be forever grateful to my incredible doctors for saving our baby's life, her post began. I am eternally grateful to my husband who rushed to my side from tour to be with me in the hospital and take care of me afterwards, my rock. And to my mom, thank you for holding my hand through this. In the post, she shared a black and white photo of Barker holding her hand as she rested on a hospital bed. As someone who has had 3 really easy pregnancies in the past, I wasn't prepared for the fear of rushing into urgent fetal surgery. I don't think anyone who has been through a similar situation can begin to understand that feeling of fear. I have a whole new understanding and respect for the mamas who have had to fight for their babies while pregnant, continued Kardashian, who shares 3 kids with ex Scott Disick. Praise be to God, walking out of the hospital with my baby boy in my tummy and safe with the truest blessing. Late last week, Blink-182 announced on Instagram that Barker had to leave the band's tour just ahead of European concert dates to rush back home to Kardashian due to an urgent family matter. No one had disclosed any more details on the matter until Kardashian's announcement today. Kardashian and Barker, who married last year, are expecting their first child together. They announced the happy news in June. And still in Culture and News, Adam Sandler reveals the secret to his 20-year marriage to his wife, Jackie. The couple star alongside their daughters in the new movie, You're So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. For over 3 decades, Adam Sandler has been the king of all things comedy. And with films like The Happy Gilmore, 50 First Dates, and the surprise Netflix hit, You're So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah, he's worked with so many incredible people over the years, but there's one very special person who has always been by his side as he makes his way through Hollywood, and that is none other than his wife, Jackie Titone. Like many celebrity love stories, Sandler and Titone first met while working on the set of Big Daddy in 1999. Jackie actually plays the waitress that viewer C takes Sandler's character Sonny Koufax's drink order in the local sports bar. Almost 4 years after Sandler and Titone first got together, they sealed the deal by tying the knot in June 2003. The couple married at Dick Clark's estate in Malibu, and they even had their dog Meatball show up in a black tuxedo jacket for the star-studded event. In 2023, Sandler posted a sweet photo from their wedding and celebrating their 20th anniversary. "Happy 20th, my sweet Jackie. Your I do was the best gift of my life. My heart has been yours since the first second I saw you, and I love and appreciate your devoted soul more and more each day. Us, the kids, let's keep going and going, babe. Lots of love to give you, always." It wasn't long after that the duo expanded their family, welcoming daughters Sadie in May 2006 and Sunny in 2008. Although the couple was busy taking care of their children, Sandler didn't stop acting, but did make it more of a family affair. Titone has appeared in so many of her husband's films, like Grown Ups and Hubie Halloween, and Sadie and Sonny have also made appearances. Their latest role includes You're So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. When talking with AARP, the magazine, in 2022, Sandler revealed what he considers to be the secret to his long-lasting marriage. "Nobody wants to hear about Adam Sandler's secret to marriage, but I guess here's the secret. Jackie and I like spending time with each other. We try to make each other laugh, try to listen, try to include each other, try to support each other. We try our best, that's all, and we don't ever think of not being together. We always talk about our future together." Aww. Okay, we're moving over to relationships. Here are 22 sizzling games for couples to spice up date night. Win together, lose together. It can be hard to know what to do for date night. Whether you've been married for 20 years or seeing each other for half a month, a romantic evening isn't the easiest thing to plan. It's too hot or cold for a park picnic. You don't really feel like sitting at another dinner, and you've already binged every new series that's hit Netflix. Well, guess what that means? It's time for game night. From traditional board games to flirty decks of cards, there's something out there for every type of couple. Maybe you're still getting to know each other, and therefore you want to go for a tamer option like Twister or Mario Kart. Or maybe you're looking to spice things up in the bedroom, and so that strip poker seems like it'll do the trick. Try out one of the games that lets you ask each other questions to get even closer with your partner. Or partake in a blind coffee test together. Whatever you choose, have fun with it. To give you some ideas, we've rounded up the 22 best games for couples to level up your date night. And if it gets too competitive, just remember that you love each other. Number 1. Artagio Talk Flirt Dare. This is 3 card games in one, so it's perfect for any couple regardless of relationship stage. Get to know your partner with the talk category or choose flirt and dare cards to push the boundaries. You can find it on Amazon for $23 and $45 at Walmart. Number 2, We're Not Really Strangers Couples Edition. Strengthen your connection with 150 questions that will unlock anything you want to know about your partner. It's broken into 3 levels, so you can start easy and slowly dig deeper. It's $20 at Amazon. Number 3, Flutlyco, and that's FLUTYCO, Love Lingual. Never know exactly what to ask your partner? Love Lingual holds 150 questions that will start a conversation and bring you closer together. Unlock intimacy at whatever stage your relationship is at. It's $25 at Amazon. Number 4, Zeitgeist, the ultimate date night game for couples. There's no better way to get to know someone than by asking the classic, "Would you rather?" There's even a spicy category so you can get a little frisky with it. It's $16 at Amazon. Number 5, Intelligent Change, Let's Get Closer. Build your emotional intimacy with a game that focuses on your connection with your partner. Progress across 3 levels, close, closer, closest. for the ultimate test of closeness in your relationship. It's $30 at Revolve. Number 6, 5-second rule, 5-second rule uncensored. Say goodbye to overthinking with this game. Just spit it out. Whatever comes to your mind, just say it. This unfiltered game is all about saying exactly what you're thinking when you're thinking it. It's $12 at Amazon and $14 at Walmart. Number 7, the Adventure Challenge Mini Dates and In Bed Edition Bundle. It's all about the little moments with this bundle. The scratch-off challenges can be completed at or near home, and the in-bed version is going to help you explore your sexual desires. It's $30 at theadventurechallenge.com. Number 8, Monogamy, the Monogamy Board Game. Which levels, going from intimate to passionate to steamy, this board game is for the couple looking to delve deeper into their sexual chemistry. Let's see if you can make it through the entire game. It's $25 at Amazon, $31 at Walmart, and $40 at Love Honey. Number 9, Uncommon Goods Strip Poker for Couples. This one is not for the faint of heart. You and your partner will be partaking in some spicy challenges, so better be up for a night of steamy romance. $26 at Uncommon Goods. Number 10, Uncommon Goods, the Couples Game. How well do you know your partner? How well do they know you? You may think you have the answers, but this game will put that to the test as you try to guess each other's responses to these questions. It's $20 at Uncommon Goods and $20 at Walmart. Number 11, Esther Perel, Where Should We Begin? It's a wholesome game with no winners or losers. With 250 prompts and 30 story cards, there's plenty to keep the conversation going. Plus, there are color-coded cards to filter out the risque topics. It's $40 at Amazon. Number 12, Hola Banana Owing Tower. It's like Jenga, but also not at all. The premise is the same, don't make the tower fall. But in this game, if you do, you'll have to do a naughty dare. The pressure is on like never before. It's $27 at Amazon. Number 13, Uncommon Good Any Night is Date Night subscription. Running into a date night slump? This subscription will give you an activity each month to do with your partner. You can choose between 3 and 6 month subscriptions. It's $305 at Uncommon Goods. Uncommon Goods 80s and 90s Hum the Song game. Feeling musically inclined? Take turns humming a variety of throwback tunes across genres like pop, TV themes, indie, and more. Once you get into the groove, it gets a whole lot easier. It's $15 at Uncommon Goods. Number 15, All Natural Shop Fun and Adventurous Date Night Box. Don't want to go with a card game for date night? This box will give you 35 date ideas that once you scratch off, you have to complete. Up for the challenge? $20 at Amazon and $32 at Walmart. Number 16, Served, as S-E-R-V-D, His and Hers. Those scenarios from your everyday lives have been turned into witty prompts in this card game. It's all about spontaneity and surprising your partner. Two aspects that a relationship most likely needs. It's $19 at Amazon. Number 17, Anu Menon and Syog Modi Blind Taste Test Coffee Kit. The coffee-loving couple will appreciate this activity. A blind taste test of expertly roasted coffee from all over the world is sure to be entertaining. Just make sure you don't do this too late at night or you really won't be getting any sleep. It's $58 at Uncommon Goods. Number 18, Never Have I Ever Classic Edition Card Game Set. Never have you ever crashed a wedding, been fingerprinted, kicked out of a bar? You might think you know everything about your partner, but this game is going to make you think again. It's $25 at Amazon and $47 at Walmart. Number 19, Bespoke Post-Game Night. Set yourself up for success with an epic game night box. From trivia cards to popcorn to gummy candy, all your bases are covered. Sometimes the best date nights are the ones where you don't have to try at all. $70 at Bespoke Post. Number 20, Nintendo Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Some good old-fashioned competition is always a date night favorite. If you can beat them on Rainbow Road, you've got bragging rights for a year, or at least until next time. It's $51 at Amazon and $80 at Walmart. Number 21, Hasbro Twister. It's a game we all know and love. You guys are going to be getting into some funky positions, but not those kinds of positions. Get your mind out of the gutter. $20 at Amazon, $20 at Walmart, and $25 at Nordstrom. Number 22, True Brands War Shots Drinking Game. Drinking meets board games in this twist on the classic war tabletop game. Fill the cups with your favorite alcohol, and please drink responsibly. We don't need things getting too crazy. It's $20 at Bespoke Post. Okay, this is in wellness. Yes, you can outsmart the algorithm. How to feel a little more in control and fulfilled the next time you start scrolling. We caution our kids against the empty calories of social media, and yet we can't seem to go to the bathroom without bringing our phones. It's only when 30 minutes down the Instagram rabbit hole go by that the self-flagellation sets in. But sharing a little Kendall Roy baby girl meme or the toddler playing Rachmaninoff is not all bad, according to Jeffrey A. Hall, director of Relationships and Technology Lab at the University of Kansas. It might even be kind of a good thing. The trick is to have certain tactical and emotional quadrails in place. Everyone needs downtime, he says. Mindlessly doing things is necessary for us to regroup and relax. In past generations, people did that by flipping through magazines or watching TV, and now we unwind by consuming content on platforms like TikTok and Instagram. It's when it starts preventing you from getting things done, or spending time with people in your life, or just feeling good about yourself, that it's time to regain control, according to Hall. Just like with a box of chocolate chip cookies, eating a few a day is fine, but scarfing the entire pack in 30 minutes while you watch The Summer I Turned Pretty can leave you hating yourself. We spoke to experts to give us some ground rules for healthier relationships with our devices. Train your feed. The algorithm is as ruthless as it is relentless, sucking you in with outrageous videos or serving up a slew of bathing suits just in time for your upcoming vacation, because yes, it has been eavesdropping. No matter what your age, anyone with a smartphone is susceptible to its charms. You pick up your phone, start mindlessly scrolling at 3:15, and before you know it, your inbox is blowing up because you're 5 minutes late to a 4 p.m. Zoom meeting. The good news is it's not your fault. The most brilliant minds in the world are designing apps to keep you there, says Hall. The whole purpose of social media, because it's free, is to sell advertising. So the platforms need you to be constantly there engaging with their product or content. The trick, then, is to retrain the algorithm in order to dictate what's coming into your feed. For starters, you can click on and spend more time on content you actually do want to see, such as tips from reputable longevity experts, and less time on content that makes you cringe or feel terrible. This means you will have to actively refrain from viral traps like videos of people taking embarrassing or possibly catastrophic falls. Next, hold the line by putting in search terms over and over again for topics relevant to your life. If you are remodeling certain rooms in your home, for example, search for bathroom renovations. Click on as many interior design posts as you want, and pretty soon your feed will be flooded with tile and hardware inspiration for as long as this content is valuable to you. Then it's not time wasted, says Hall. You're choosing which advertisers get your attention. Another way to curate your feed is to send a clear message to the algorithm about what you're not interested in seeing. There's usually a little dot, dot, dot next to the post that you can click on and select unfollow, explains Tobias Rose Stockwell, a technologist and author of the new book Outrage Machine. No more watching mind-numbing videos of Hailey Bieber prancing on a yacht, the Instagram equivalent of a bag of Doritos. Taking the 5 seconds to update the settings rather than habitually scrolling past garbage content saves you time and mental energy in the long run. Master these tools because otherwise they will master you, says Rose Stockwell. Make your feed less perfect. A feed dominated by skinny, filtered, perfect-looking influencers who do Pilates 4 times a week while on perpetual vacation in Ibiza isn't doing you any favors. Dilute them with some real people, too. A recent study published in the journal Body Image found that adding diverse body types in the feeds of young women ages 18 to 25 improved their body image and decreased their tendency to compare their appearance with others in just 2 weeks. It's natural to compare yourself to others, says Yalda T. Uhls. That's U-H-L-S. PhD, a child psychologist with media researcher and author of Media Moms and Digital Dads. The book delves into the psychological theory of social comparison, of which there are two types, upward social comparison and downward social comparison. If you're a tennis player and fan, for example, you might follow Serena Williams for inspiration. But too much Serena can cause you to compare your game to hers and become deflated. Upward social comparison is a mechanism that can sometimes make you feel bad, says Uhls. Downward social comparison, on the other hand, can make you feel better about yourself, like, my life isn't that bad. The key is to make sure you pay attention to how certain posts make you feel and maintain a good mix of the aspirational and the real. Don't put only these lofty goal types, these perfect visions of the world in your feed, she says. Make sure there's some messiness, some authenticity, some things that help lift you up and make you feel like you're doing okay compared to others. Turn off notifications. One easy way to shake the spell of social media is to turn off notifications, which appear on your screen even when it's locked and alert you to the fact that, OMG, someone has commented on your post or liked your story. Thanks to that gratifying, if fleeting, dopamine boost, you just have to check. That's the fishing hook in the water that pulls you right back in, says Rose Stockwell. However, blocking these attention thieves is a simple tactic. Go into settings on your phone. Find notifications, and with the exception of phone calls, messages, and calendar pop-ups, just go down the list of apps and flip the switch to turn them off. Flex the mute button. For better or worse, the social media we consume can dictate our mood. Seeing things like family pictures, cute cats, and close friends' daughter graduating from middle school can warm our hearts and keep us feeling connected to our friends and communities across the globe. And then there are these people whose feeds bring out the worst qualities in us, inspiring envy, rage, annoyance, FOMO, or Schadenfreude. Whether it's hack, psychological wisdom, tone-deaf navel-gazing, thirst-trap preening, or straight-up gloating, according to Hall, if a feed inspires any unwanted emotion or is negatively impacting your mental well-being, you don't need to suffer through the posts. We have the power to mute those people or unsubscribe to those people, says Hall. Social media companies have generally given us the right to say, no, I don't want to see that anymore. The best part is nobody has to know. The muting function allows you to not see their content without unfollowing them. Everybody wins. The truth is, even people we love can have a social media shtick that wears thin for whatever reason. The lesson here is to clock how certain posts make you feel, and to make no apology about excising those feeds from your life. Be really intentional about your social media usage. Sounds familiar. You wake up, check your phone. Go to the bathroom with your phone, scroll while your coffee brews. We are always kind of absentmindedly scrolling on the algorithm, says Rose Stockwell, and this is a problem. We all get the downside, especially for teens. A study published in JAMA Psychiatry shows that adolescents who spend more than 3 hours per day on social media may be at heightened risk for mental health problems. We also recognize that deleting all your social media apps isn't realistic either. A more effective approach is to set some boundaries around how and when you use them. To reduce your time on social media, be really intentional about it, says Rose Stockwell. So, like, I'm going to check this 2 times per day. I'm going to check once in the morning, once in the evening. I'm going to build some structure around this so that I am not in this constant passive habituation. Maybe you want to scroll during lunch or when the kids go to bed, or you set an alarm for 20-minute work intervals and then reward yourself with 5 minutes TikTok breaks in between. Whatever works for you. The key is to short-circuit the Pavlovian response. In addition to creating some structure, Rose Stockwell swears by the app OneSec, which cherry-picks from meditation and mindfulness practices to save people from getting lost online for hours. OneSec essentially forces users to take a deep breath before entering into a platform. Just that simple pause disrupts the habitual response. That brief moment of friction reminds you, wait, why am I here? And what actually reduces the power and the sway of the algorithm? Create a news diet. News is stressful. There was a global pandemic. It's the hottest year on record, and it seems we can't go a month without hearing about another shooting. While we want to stay on top of news, we do so at the risk of getting sucked into the doom scroll quicksand. That's why both Hall and Rose Stockwell recommend that they call a healthy news diet. Like a real diet, this means limiting how much you consume to certain times of the day, rather than just consuming endlessly without stop, says Hall. And instead of binging on the empty caloric intake of outlandish fake news, follow only reputable channels or outlets you trust to provide quality information. Make social media work for you. Now that you've used the quadrails to stamp out junk default content, use social platforms to feed your real-life passions and projects. If you have a hobby or like to play music, follow experts in that field. The apps give you a direct line to everyone, from music producers making beats and thrifty green thumbs demonstrating how to propagate an entire garden from a few cuttings to skilled home chefs giving you step-by-step instructions for making a traditional Peking duck via a very informative Instagram Live. In addition, there's a ton of amazing educational content and mental health experts sharing life-changing insights that would never otherwise be seen by so many people. Just make sure they're trustworthy. You might be following someone who's trying to sell something or has inaccurate advice, says Ools. Tune into how it's making you feel. If it doesn't make you feel good, trust your gut. To find legit experts, look for people who are respected or affiliated with trusted organizations and educational institutions in their field, such as the American Psychological Association, or go to their feeds and see who they follow. Create a private online community. Take a cue from teenagers and create a Finsta account that allows you to be your authentic self with a small group of your closest friends in a safe and healthy online space, says Ools. More often than not, private communication, where it's 8 of your close friends rather than 500 people, makes you feel better, she says. Then you're getting the pluses of social media, which is true social connection when you can't be in person. Parts of this article were edited due to time. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This program is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.